Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Global Cancer Symposium 2.0. My name is Nathan Crane. I'm the award-winning director of Cancer, the Integrative Perspective, as well as the director of the Health and Healing Club. And you can learn more about that at healthandhealingclub.com. But today, I am really honored and excited to be talking with Dr. Rashid Buttar. What we're going to be talking about, what he's going to be sharing with us, is really a deeper understanding about why we get cancer and the vital role of the immune system to fight damaged cells. I'm going to read you Dr. Buttar's bio. We're going to bring him in and we're going to start diving in. I mean, when I found out about the work that he's doing and has been doing and pioneering for many years, I knew I had to get him here on the symposium. I'm so grateful that he said yes to be here with all of us because he has so much wisdom, clinical experience. They do a ton of research. They work with thousands of patients. So he really knows what he's talking about. And you're going to learn a lot today. So let me read his bio and we'll bring him in. Dr. Rashid Buttar graduated from Washington University with a double major in biology and theology and went on to attend medical school at the University of Osteopathic Medicine and Health Sciences, College of Medicine and Surgery. He trained in general surgery and emergency medicine and served as brigade surgeon and director of emergency medicine while serving in the U.S. Army. Dr. Buttar is board certified in clinical medical toxicology, preventive medicine, is board eligible in emergency medicine, and has achieved fellowship status in three separate medical societies. He serves as a medical director for the Centers for Advanced Medicine with clinics in California and North Carolina with planned expansion into more states. And Dr. Buttar has patients from 93 countries, is an international best-selling author and a world-acclaimed speaker with an international reputation in effectively treating cancer and autism. Dr. Buttar, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Nathan. I appreciate it.
So we were kind of talking behind the scenes just a moment ago about this process of change, right? What it looks like as a human being to go through the fire of challenge, what it looks like in our lives when we're dealing with something like chronic disease, like cancer, we're dealing with, challenges in our society or, you know, pandemic issues of lockdown and losing jobs and creating more stress and adding to more chronic disease and so on and so forth. And, one of the things I said to you was, well, that's, you know, it's very sad to me because so many people are suffering and there's not a lot of, I would say, good quality, truthful education that's reaching enough people. And one of the things you said was, yes, but that's also necessary. It's part of change. We have to go through these hard times to, basically break through into a better understanding, better quality of life, understanding our health. And I thought what you said there and what our conversation was definitely revelatory and beautiful and really important. So, you know, I'd love for us to start a little bit there and maybe you can expand on that, especially for people who are dealing with chronic diseases like cancer, where it is not a pleasant experience for most people. There's a lot of fear. There's a lot of underlying trauma. There's misunderstandings. There's pain of dealing with certain conventional treatments and so on and so forth.
Yeah, you know, last night I did my weekly live stream that I do to the public. And then I did a private live stream that goes to our membership, which is the International Association for a Disease-Free World. And there was a question that was posed by one of my past patients. And I recognized his name and had one of my coaches that was on the call, that was moderating the call. I had them bring Chris on live. And, it was an interesting story. So I'll just start off with the story. And you asked a very important question. You talked about, you know, as you were giving the introduction, you said about the, you know, why is it some people are dealing with this stuff? And so they may have the wrong mindset. And I don't remember exactly how you said it, but it was almost like people are in that state of paralyzing fear, whatever it may be, and dealing with this trauma issue right now that's led to whatever, it's manifested itself as cancer, whatever the case is. So I'm going to give you a spiritual definition of cancer, or my spiritual definition of cancer. But before I do that, I'm going to tell you what happened on this call last night. So his name is Chris, and he came to me at the age of 29 with a diagnosis of stage 4 melanoma. And it was interesting because he went to Cleveland Clinic, and Cleveland Clinic said he had 6 months left to live. Mm-hmm. And he's a professional golfer, and he didn't like that answer. So he went to Mayo Clinic, and Mayo said, yeah, we can give you about a year, but we'd have to amputate your leg. And being a professional golfer, he wasn't going to, you know, take that option. So he came to us, and Chris is now, he's 29, then he's 41 now. So needless to say, you know, he didn't have 6 months or a year left. And so I, even though the question that he was asking about the virological model and a philosophy that's out there about how viruses don't cause disease, which is the advanced virological model. And so he asked the question, and I gave them my, gave him my answer, for, also because the rest of the audience was interested in it. But I kept him on, and I had him talk about his experience of going through cancer, because at a retreat a number of years after we had finished this treatment, we had a retreat for cancer patients, but it actually was a retreat for people that wanted the next level of understanding. And it was interesting because we had as many people from outside the US as we had in the US. We actually had it in Mexico, and we had as many doctors attending as we had patients attending. And it was on purpose limited to a group that we could have, you know, direct interaction. So I think there was only like 40 people in there, but it was a very high end, very private, 1 week long retreat. And what was interesting during that retreat, we were standing, Chris and I were standing on the back end of a yacht, and there was, you know, music and people just having great food, everybody's having a great time during one of our downtimes. And Chris made I made a comment to Chris. I said, you know, what an inspiration he was. And he was like, me? He goes, you're the inspiration. You're the one who got me where I'm at. And I was like, no, I didn't get you anywhere. You got yourself there. It was you and the creator that did it. And then he said something that was very profound. And that what he said, I have heard multiple times from people that we've treated that are still around today. And what he said was, you know, if it wasn't for the cancer, I wouldn't be the person I'm today. And he said it in a way that was actually, his exact words were, something to the essence of how great of a gift cancer had been for him in his life. Now, you think about this for a second. How can a person that's dealing with a terminal disease that he's been told that he's going to die within 6 months, or another place says a year, and these are both, not these aren't like average clinics, right? These are arguably in the top five, maybe top 10 clinics on the entire world, so-called top clinics in the entire world, conventionally speaking. And he's told that he's going to die in 6 months or in a year, he's only going to get a year if he amputates his leg. And now he's saying that the greatest gift he ever received in his life was that journey of going through cancer. How can a person say that? Well, see, if I say that or you say that, you know, I lost my mom to cancer a few years ago, but I'd been treating cancer for over 20 years. You know, you lost your grandfather, I think you said. You know, we can say whatever we want to say, but we haven't gone through it. Now, when somebody's gone through it, says that it was the greatest gift, it's powerful. So how can a person say it's a powerful gift? How can a person say it was the most powerful gift that they ever received? How can they say that they wouldn't have been the person they are today if it hadn't been for the cancer? And this comes back to what you said, you know, when people are in this situation, they're paralyzed, they're scared, they don't know what to do. They're asking, why me? They're, you know, in a state of panic and frenzy and trying to find the right answers and this and that. And what they need to do is really stop for a second and understand what's happening. Because there is a spiritual definition of cancer, and I hope that people hear the spiritual definition of cancer. There's many different, I can give you a scientific definition of cancer. The scientific definition of cancer is it's a suppression of apoptosis and uncontrolled cellular proliferation. That's the actual definition of cancer from an observational standpoint, what's actually happening on a cellular level. But from a spiritual level, cancer is essentially a stagnation. If you look at cancer in all aspects, whether you look at spiritual, you look at physiological, you look at, you know, quantum physics definitions, it's all the same thing. It's about stagnation. It's a stagnation of chi. If you look at it from the Eastern medicine standpoint, it's a stagnation of energetics. It's a stagnation of spirit. It's a stagnation of the lymphatics. You know, it's a stagnation. It's a prevention of the flow of energy. So my spiritual definition of cancer is really that you have been existing. You haven't been living. And so the creator sends you a message. And that message is a message of cancer, that either you get busy living or you can stay in your state of existing. Now, what does that exactly mean? Well, wait a second. Cancer, how can you say that's existing? When you work out, do you work out once or do you continually work out on a regular basis? Obviously, we work out on a regular basis because, you know, growth stops. If, as soon as your growth stops and you hit that plateau, people think, well, yeah, if I stop working out, then I'm going to be at this plateau. Wrong. Where growth stops, decay sets in. If you're not growing, you're dying. That's the bottom line. Nobody thinks that you change the oil in your car one time and then you've done with the rest of the lifetime of that car. You got to continue doing it, right? So the process of living versus existing, living is a process where you're moving forward. Existing is no longer moving forward. You're just there. Okay. You're worried about this. You're scared about that. You've got a phobia of heights or, you know, claustrophobia or fear of spiders or fear, whatever. It's all a stagnation of energy. So to me, cancer is a wake up call from the creator saying that either you get busy living, meaning growing, or you can stay in your state of existence. And remember, existence, people think, well, then I'm going to hit that plateau. No, you're going to go down. What is cancer? It's a steady decay. Where growth stops, decay sets in. That's exactly what cancer is. And it could have been that the creator says, okay, you know, I'm going to give you a warning. You know, like the people that get shot or get in the car accidents or fall out of a plane and the parachute doesn't open. They didn't get a warning. Boom, they're taken. But those that are given a chance, like your mission hasn't been fulfilled yet. It's your choice. What do you want to do? It's a wake-up call. It's a wake-up call to get up and start doing what you were meant to do, to start living, because they're not living. And that's really what I believe the definition of cancer is. Now, people would say, well, what about a four-year-old child? How can you say that? A four-year-old child doesn't have an issue like that. Well, you're right. There's a different aspect there. And that's now you're introducing in other aspects. Because children, you know, we can start talking about the indigo children and talk about the children of light and what autism really is and all these other things. And it's going to get, you know, I don't know how much of your audience is going to be able to digest this. I mean, we could start talking about miasms and all sorts of things that would really confuse people. But, you know, I want to keep it on this level. I don't want to go up to the, you know, three mile altitude standpoint. I think we need to probably keep it here unless you open up that can of worms for me and you decide we want to go there. But that's maybe my definition.
Maybe we could do a separate interview if you have time and interest just on the deeper spiritual reasons of cancer, because we have a whole section as part of the symposium about spirituality and cancer, because it is an incredibly important aspect of being a human being, right?
Yep, absolutely.
But go ahead, finish your thought.
So it's just that we are given a message and it's up to us whether we hear the message. And those people that hear the message, they stay here and because they've got their work to do. And you know, as of December 2019, so we're almost a year out. Next month will be December 2020. 2020 is almost over. Thank God for that. We've made it through this year. And you know, I believe that 2021 is going to be a fantastic beginning of the new age, if you will. But as of December 2019, a year ago, we had 14 stage 4 cancer patients. Stage 4, so that everybody understands, that's considered terminal. There's nothing left after that. They usually have failed chemo radiation at this point, and they're referred to hospice and given, you know, 3 months, 6 months, whatever it is that they end up giving them, which is, by the way, totally ludicrous and BS, but that's the conventional thought process. We have 14 stage 4 cancer patients now that are 15 years out from our treatment. And we have two that are over 20 years out. But actually, excuse me, that was wrong. 14. We have 14 patients that are 15 years out from the treatment. I got that messed up. So apologies for that. 14 patients, not 15, that are 14 years out. We may have one or two patients that are going to hit that 15-year mark coming up here in the next couple of years. But the reason I say that, that's not to boast or, you know, there's a little bit of pride there, but it's more to show people what is possible. You know, if they have one or two or even three, you know, it could be coincidence, but not 14. Statistically, you need to have an N of 32 to be of statistical significance. Well, that N of 32, if I look at more than 10 years out, you know, we've probably got, I don't know whether we'd have 100, but we would be pretty close, probably in the 80, 90 people range. But 15 years out, 14, even though it doesn't meet statistical significance numbers, from what I've been told by other physicians that I know, that they've never heard of anybody having, you know, that many people 15 years out from a diagnosis of stage four. So the conventional side says 14, they say 5 years, you cannot use the word cure unless you go 5 years out. And we don't use the word cure anywhere because, you know, if you say water will cure your dehydration, you just made a drug claim. And the way the system's set up, it's not for, I mean, when people have to try to own words, you know, trying to control outcomes, then you start realizing what their agenda is. So anybody who says, oh, you can't use this word for this many years, they've got a different agenda. It's not about the person's life. It's an agenda. They're trying to protect some type of thing. They're trying to create their own fiefdom. It's a territorial type thing. But the reason I bring this up is because I want people to understand what is possible, what is probable if you end up having the right mindset, if you have the right belief system, if you are willing to take action and do what's necessary. And it's out there for everybody. It's not unique to one person or 10 people. I mean, you know, why not you? Anybody can have that. It's just up to you whether or not you've got the right mindset and the right belief system and take action. And that's what it comes down to.
Yeah, I love that you shared that story of Chris saying, you know, cancer is the greatest gift in my life, because when I was producing conferences in San Diego back in 2013, 2014, there were cancer-specific conferences. You know, one of the, and I've since done many interviews with, you know, cancer conquerors, people who have reversed their cancer diagnosis, who have lived, you know, 5, 10, 15 years past their prognosis date, doing, you know, natural approaches, holistic approaches, integrative approaches, when conventional medicine had failed them or they decided to go a different path. And I'm talking, my entire volunteer team at our conference of like 20 or 25 people were all like people who had cancer or who had reverse cancer. And I remember the difference in talking with somebody who was telling me, cancer is the greatest gift I ever had. You know, it's like God gave me this gift, or I needed this, or whatever their spiritual or deeper understanding was like, it was the greatest gift they ever had. And then I'm talking to somebody else who says, this is the worst thing that's ever happened to me. And so I started questioning, what's the difference in mindset? How can these two people have the exact same experience, or let's say the exact same disease, if you will, and yet they have totally opposite experiences? And there's commonalities that you find is the person who tunes in, as you're saying, to live their life. You know, I look at it as, and when I interview them and ask them, they say, you know, I learned so much from it. I started taking better care of myself. I started, you know, treating myself with self-love. And when I really didn't take care of myself at all, I started spending more time with my family and doing the things that are important to me and being of service. And here they are volunteering at a cancer conference to help other people going through cancer, obviously doing something meaningful and fulfilling in their life, right? Which adds to purpose and meaning in your life. And so all these things added up to this person going, wow, this is the best thing that ever happened to me, versus this person going, oh my God, it's the worst thing that's ever happened to me, because they haven't quite gotten to that mindset yet. And so, you know, how would you share with people, what are some different viewpoints, different ways of looking, different actions people can take to help get to a better mindset of looking at like how this actually could be a gift? How could this terrible chronic disease that means I'm going to die could actually be a gift in my life?
Well, you know, you said, how could it be a gift? So facts don't change. It is a gift. It's how they see it. It's their choice. Life is about choices. You can see it as a miserable curse, or you can see it as a gift. Whether or not a person, you know, how can I see it as a gift? Well, that's your choice to see it as a gift. Because if you are willing to look at the things that are painful in your life and realize that, you know, you got where you got because of the choices that you made, and you take self-responsibility and then continue that self-responsibility by saying, okay, I'm going to take action, I'm going to do something, versus being a victim. It all comes down to that choice of being a victim you know, poor me, I did this, I was beaten up, I had this happen, you know, the medical board came after me, they beat me up, blah, blah, whatever the case is, you know, I went through my divorces, it took all my money, blah, blah, whatever the case is, it doesn't make any difference. You can add whatever storyline you want in there, but it's a choice to become a victim and lay down your sword, or you can ask for guidance and you can pick it up and pick that sword up and continue to fight. But it's a choice. And I think that that old adage, you know, do you see a glass as being half empty or half full? And people would say that's a semantics. Is it half a dozen or is it six? You know, well, yeah, it is semantics, but the choice of how you see it is going to make the difference. Now, I'm not a person that believes in, oh, self-affirmation. Okay, affirmations are good, but affirmations don't do diddly unless you put something else behind it. So let me kind of give you a short story that hopefully your listeners, I'm not going to bore them and they haven't heard the story before, but if they've heard it, you know, say lovey doesn't make any, it doesn't hurt to hear the story again. But the story is of, have you ever heard the story about the ranger that was in a valley, built his ranch up there, and then there was a message that he got that everybody needed to evacuate this valley because it was about to be flooded. Did you ever hear that story?
No, okay. I don't think so. It doesn't sound familiar.
Yeah. So basically this ranger, farmer had built his ranch in a valley. And then he gets this message saying that the valley is going to be flooded. Everybody needs to clear out. And he's like, I'm not going out. I put my life into this place. I'm not moving. So about a day later, these rangers come up in a truck and they said, look, this valley is about to be flooded. Jump in the back. We'll take you to safety and everything's going to be fine. And the man says, nope, I'm not leaving. You guys clear out. God won't forsake me. So the rangers in the truck, they drive off. Well, the water starts coming and it goes up into the first, you know, first foot of water, and it comes into his floorboards, and he's like, you know, God won't forsake me. So another big four-wheel drive vehicle pulls up, and again, another set of rangers, and they're like, man, this thing's going to happen. So you need to jump in. Otherwise, you know, you're going to get flooded and this is going to be dangerous. Nope. God won't forsake me. So they leave. Water continues to rise, comes up to this first floor of his house. He's on the second floor. A boat comes in, you know, rescue workers, get in the boat. We'll take you to safety. Nope. God won't forsake me. Water continues to rise. Boat drives off. He's now on top of his roof. He's hugging the chimney of his roof. And a chopper comes up and they send down our safety rope. And, you know, he's like, no, he waves him off. God won't forsake me. Chopper pilot's like, you know, what's he saying? The other guy says, I don't know. He's waving us off and we don't have enough fuel. So they leave. So now he's on top of this house, hugging onto the chimney, and the weight of the water crushes the house and it collapses. And he's struggling in the debris, trying to keep his head up above water. And with his last gasp of breath, right before he's about to drown, he comes up to the surface and he looks to the sky and he says, God, why have you forsaken me? And the skies part and God appears and he says, forsake you? I sent you rangers in a car. I sent you rangers in a truck. I sent a boat for you. I sent a helicopter for you. What else do you want from me? So it's important to remember that God helps those who help themselves, right? If you're driving down the road with the car, and you look at your fuel tank and it says it's almost empty, you can say, I'm not going to run out of fuel. But unless you do something to find fuel, you're going to run out of fuel. So I equate affirmations with that attitude of, all I have to do is say an affirmation, it's all going to happen. Not so. You need to now take action, all right? And so I have a formula for that. And, you know, if we have time, we'll go into that formula. But bottom line is that you need to take action. So you need to first embrace what's happening, understand the energetic basis of what you're experiencing, and have some self-analysis. Be critical. Take yourself out of your body and have a conversation with yourself. Have that person come outside. And not only are you having a conversation with yourself, but now yourself looking back at you. Be candid, be open, be bold, have bold communication with yourself, right? And it's a choice. It's a choice to do that. It's a choice to sit there and cry in misery and make your life miserable. So to me, we're all a product of our experiences, but it's up to us to now dictate, are we going to go right or are we going to go left? And we are going to ultimately be responsible for reaping the benefits of our decision or paying the consequences of our decision. But it's up to us to make that choice. And I think that as a global society, we're in that position right now. And I think that there are things that are coming to a head, which is very exhilarating to see some of these things happening. And, you know, there some people that play chess may see what's happening. Some people that don't play chess may not see. Some people that do play chess may still be blind. I don't know. But there are things that are happening that are part and parcel of the struggle of humanity. And on a global scale and a historical standpoint, this is a very, very exciting time to be alive, because I believe that this time in history will be remembered in the future, well past our generations. And, you know, our grandkids and our great grandkids will say that, you know, my great grandfather Nathan was part and parcel of that battle and lived and, you know, told stories about it. So I think we can choose to see it as, oh my God, this is a terrible place. And, you know, what's happening and we're all doomed. Well, here's the thing, whether we're doomed or not, you know, we're all going to die, first of all. And I'm going to, for me personally, if that 1% happens where things aren't going to be the way I expect them to be, I'm probably not going to be around to experience more than that, you know, much more of that anyway, because I'm not going to get a vaccine in my body. I'm not going to lay down my sword. You know, my thing is, how many of the bastards can I take out with me before I go? That's my attitude. And that's not necessarily everybody's attitude, but, you know, I served with the U.S. Army. I was with the 5th Special Forces Group. I served with the 2nd Infantry Division and with the 101st Air Assault Division. And, you know, we had the mindset's a little bit different when you're a special operator. And in the SF, we used to have some silly things that were humorous. But, you know, when you hear the same humor over and over again, it kind of becomes indoctrinated in you. And one of those things was, you know, kill them all, let God sort them out. Now, that's not obviously a very conducive to a physician mindset, but that was one of the things that, you know, one of the goofy things that we used to say. But
now you're doing the opposite of that. Save them all and let it all be sorted out by itself.
Well, even when I was SF, though, I was a doctor there, too. But, you know, we had it was just one of the things that, you know, the guys used to say. So, I mean, I was, you know, in my group, there was only like 2 doctors out of, you know, everybody. So it's, but you gotta be a little bit, you gotta have lost a part of your mind to actually do that kind of stuff anyway. And that was actually one of the criteria that they used to recruit. Actually, it was funny because the criteria that they used to select, at least with me, when I was selected, there were 5 criteria that this guy, Major Campbell, told me to see. A PT score, you have to have a max on your PT score, your physical training score, language ability, MOS. So I was a doctor. That's one of the reasons. Ethnicity, because, you know, with special forces, what they do is they try to find people that already have some connection with the area. Like 5th group covers the Middle East and Northern Africa. And since I'm originally from the Middle East, and since I'm of the Muslim faith, that was one of the criteria they were looking at. Mm-hmm. So he was ethnicity, language ability, PT score, MOS, and the 5th reason was crazy enough to do it, you know, stupid enough to do it.
So, but you got to be a little bit crazy to be, you know, on the path that you're on in terms of standing up to the societal norms and the medical monopoly and the misinformation campaigns. And you got to be a little crazy, but you got to be strong and brave and wise and intelligent as well. So
well, I like to think that it's that I have a high level of motivation, and that motivation is because I have 3 children that, regardless of my relationship with them, one of my children, you know, actually doesn't talk to me. I have no idea why. After I went through a divorce, stepmom, she hated her stepmom. And then after I got a divorce, now she doesn't talk to me. I don't know why, but I have 3 children, and regardless of whether they talk to me or they don't talk to me, as parents, I have a very, very high level of motivation to make sure that I leave this planet better for them than I found it. And I don't know whether you have any children or not, but if you don't, do you have children?
I do. I have 2 children, and I am on the exact same page as you. I mean, it's a big motivation.
Why? Once you're a parent, once you're a parent, you know, that motivation becomes, I mean, everybody who's a parent, I was just going to say, if you're a parent, you know exactly what I'm talking about. And that's my motivation. So whatever it takes, whatever is necessary. And I know that this planet is supposed to be a better place, and it's going to continue to be a better place. But there have been certain nefarious forces at play, some for hundreds, if not thousands of years, that have been at play, and that have created a lot of the heartache and misery on this planet. And God is a God of abundance, right? So we have a poverty mindset that's been taught to us, that is part of our belief system. This thing with cancer is part of that poverty mindset. You know, if you don't do this and you don't do that, and, you know, then the guilt aspect and then the trauma aspect, and you're too stupid or you're too ugly or you're too fat or you're too skinny, and all these things that, you know, we take on, we don't understand, we don't realize the damage that it does, how it affects us, how it affects our heart and our lungs, and how it affects our mind. But as Paul Allen wrote in his book, As a Man Thinketh, over 100 years ago, the body is nothing more than the slave to the mind. So if there's something wrong with your body, you must first fix your mind in order to fix the body. If you don't fix your mind, you will never fix the body.
Right.
And so it comes back to that same thing we talked about, the belief system, you know, what you believe and how you, you know, the messages that you put in your own body, in your own mind, how you talk to yourself. You know, the concept of self-love, it's a really, really difficult thing. It's one of my hardest things, right? Because I'm extremely, extremely harsh with myself. And I've realized how harsh I am with myself. And, you know, I mean, my staff tell me how different, like I've got one of my staff members that's been with me a little over 10 years, and she's actually has gone part-time the last few years, but she's coming back full-time because we're growing at a very rapid pace, and I needed somebody with her level of experience. And I asked her, would she come back? In fact, I've got a couple of staff members that have been part-time that are coming on full-time, and we've gone through some transitions, and it's been, again, a beautiful thing because it's a Herxheimer response. You know, it's that healing crisis that you go through all parts of life, you know, whether it's your health, your wellness, your family, your economics, your business, you know, spiritually. We all go through these crises, and these crises are opportunities for growth.
Yeah.
And we've gone through that on a business level, and it's been fantastic. It's painful, but it's fantastic because you see what's happening. I mean, you know, I can't help but laugh, even though everybody else around me is crying. I'm like, guys, this is a good thing. Embrace it. And then sure enough, they start seeing how beautiful it is.
But, trust me, it's going to be good. It's going to be good. Just give it some time.
Exactly. You know, so it's when I was talking to her, she said, by the way, I just want to thank you for how flexible you are. Well, she goes, I really want to thank you. And I just want to say thank you. And I'm like, thank me for what? And she said, well, you know, and I'm like, no, I don't. You know, we just had a conversation. You're coming on, but what are you like thanking me for coming back on full time? I mean, what are you talking about? She says, no, just for being so flexible. And I'm like, what do you mean being flexible? And she says, but you're just very flexible. And she goes, you know, you used to be very rigid. And I realized as she said this, that I've actually started to exercise being kinder to myself. And when you do that, you know, it's not that I was ever mean to any of my staff, you know, like I didn't throw instruments at them and that kind of stuff, but I did expect my staff to perform, but everybody on my staff has known for years. I mean, the legend is, you know, that I don't sleep. They nobody thinks that I sleep because, you know, they get emails from me at 2 a.m, 4 a.m, you know, 5 a.m. And then, you know, I'm at the office at 8 or like, when did you sleep? And then, and for many years, you know, I used to pull an all-nighter every other day. I was used to it because in general surgery, you know, you work 24-hour cycle, and then you're as a resident, actually you work 36 hours and you get 12 hours off. But you know, as a in that lifestyle in emergency medicine, same type of thing. I used to work nights in the ER and I worked in the day in the clinic. So your body kind of gets used to certain things, but I was very harsh with myself because I expected everybody to live up to the same work ethic that I had. And it's not fair to anybody to do that. And it's actually stupid because that work ethic has, you know, it may be a good work ethic, but then you take a toll on your body, you know, and I've had gray hair since I was the age 11, but, you know, people say, oh, you know, Dr. Toro, maybe, you know, I mean, I had gray when I was 20s and my 30s, I had gray hair. So I think that, you know, I used to tell people that I needed that gray hair so I could look wise. Now I don't, you know, so I looked older, so I had more wisdom. And now that I'm older, I figured that, you know, I probably don't need as much, at least I'm happy that I've got hair, right? So some hair. So anyway, the point is that you have to be kinder to yourself. And I didn't even realize that I had become kinder to myself until I heard people saying that have known me for a long time that they're seeing a difference in me and how I'm treating them. Not that I treated them bad before. It was just that I was always at a certain pace. And now I'm more accommodating to people for their pace. I understand if they can't keep that pace. But I've learned that also, you know, when you talk about this from a spiritual standpoint, the traumas that we experienced as kids and things that we heard, they have an impact on us, on every one of us, whether we think we do and we don't think it does. It does have an impact on us. We may not be cognitively conscious of it, but it does. And to speak to yourself with kindness, speak to yourself as the 2-year-old version of yourself. So if you're talking to yourself, Nathan, you don't hit a milestone, you don't hit a deadline, you know, you're gonna be, my God, I'm so stupid. That's how we talk to ourselves. And so if we can talk to ourselves, how would you talk to your, you know, 3-year-old? How would you talk to your child as a 3-year-old? Well, you wouldn't say, how stupid are you, hit, miss that deadline. You know, you would tell your 3-year-old that it's okay, honey, you know, it'll be okay. You just, and that's how we should be talking to ourselves. And yet we don't. I mean, I know I don't. And I, you know, even I'm telling you this, I will beat myself up, but I don't beat myself up as much anymore. Because in my mind, I see that every day goes on, you know, more kids are getting poisoned with vaccines and getting, you know, mercury toxic, and more people are dying from various pathologies. And that's really what my incentive is to kind of, you know, because I kind of see it as every day that if I'm sitting there enjoying a movie, there's a guilt portion that I have, right? And most people may not have this, but we have guilt with certain things. We create these traumas for ourselves. And the guilt is that, you know, I'm sitting here enjoying a movie, but there are people that need help. And so having a way of being able to reach those people and was a very, very significant fueling component in my life. And now I have had the experience over the last, you know, I've had the blessing of probably hearing a couple of thousand times how people have told me that I've saved their life. And that's just, it never loses its power. But what about all the people that can't afford to come, that are, you know, we have patients from 94 countries now, but what about those people that can't come, right? And in the last couple of years, I've had the true blessing of having those same words, hearing those same words from people that I've never met. They never came to the clinic. It was done remotely. They were able to get help from extensions of what I was able to do. And that's really what my goal is, because I can only see so many people in a day, right? But if I can create a system that can help people no matter where they are, whether they ever encounter me personally or not. And when you have somebody that comes up at you at a conference that says, Dr. Pattar, you saved my life, and you're looking at them, and then they tell you what they did when they did this and they joined that, and then they started doing the 2 simple changes and they saw a difference in 3 weeks, and then, you know, were able to come off disability. But that is empowering to me, because now I know that I don't have to, it's not limited to what I can do. It's becoming, you know, not to use a cliche, but it's becoming viral. It's going out naturally and people are finding the truth. And that was what fueled me. And now I can sit back a little bit and say, okay, you know, maybe I should go fishing again. It's been about 35 years since I went fishing. So,
you know, I love that you brought that up, especially from your own experience and perspective as well. I had a wonderful spiritual teacher years ago when I lived in San Diego. It was a Buddhist temple I used to go visit on the weekends. And I'd sit and talk with the monks and listen and meditate and just have a really beautiful experience with these incredible people that, you know, were detached from all of, you know, society. I mean, they lived very simple lives, ate one meal a day, meditated, you know, multiple hours a day, and all of that to, one, relieve suffering within themselves, but relieve suffering for all beings on the planet. And Pra Jañantaramuro, it was his name. He was known as the outlaw monk. He was a world famous monk in Thailand who came to the United States and set up temples. And he was there a few times. I got to sit and talk with him. And one of his famous quotes I always saw on the wall was, when the heart is good, everything else is good. And from a physical perspective, sure, that was really from a mental, emotional, spiritual perspective, right? That when you love yourself, when you care for yourself, when you have compassion for yourself, not only everything for your own life is good, but then everything, like when he says everything, he means everything is good. Every person you talk to, everybody that you help, every interaction that you have, coming from that space of compassion and love and care for yourself, then your tank is filled up. You have the energy to go out and serve others. And, you know, that teaching from him has always stuck with me and has been a big part of my life. And I think it's a really important piece for people dealing with cancer, is that you have to learn to love yourself, to care about yourself, to give yourself the time for self-care, give yourself the time for meditation, give yourself the time to go on the walk, go do the things that you enjoy to do. And as you're saying, you know, not be so hard on yourself, because those are the things that lead to cancer. And, you know, we're, I don't know, 45 minutes into this interview, and I know I opened up with the interview is all about the immune system, and all that. We haven't even said the immune system once, but if you're worried about that, don't be, because everything that we're talking about directly affects the immune system, either positively or negatively. And so I'd love for us to shift a little more in that direction now, in terms of, you know, how does the immune system actually contribute to helping us to remove cancer cells from our body? You know, people tuning in here may have heard something along the lines of, I know, you know, there's doctors in my film who have said this, there's doctors in our summits who have said this at our conferences. They say, you know, if you had a fully functioning immune system, you wouldn't have a cancer diagnosis. And so that kind of blows over some people's heads. But if you really unpack that and dive in, what is the immune system? How does it function? What downregulates our immune system? What activates our immune system? You start to unlock a bigger picture of what we can actually do about cancer, right? And so maybe I'd love for you to talk about that and what the immune system is and what we can do for it.
Well, before I go into that, I just want to add a final thought to what you just said. And that was, you know, about being kinder and loving yourself. I want people to think about this. How can you love someone else if you can't love yourself? It's impossible to truly love someone else unless you start with yourself. And I've heard people say, no, I love my children. I love my this, I love my that, but they treat themselves so harshly. And so just think about that for a moment. If you really, truly want to love someone, you must love yourself first so that you can express that love. It's kind of like when you're in a flight, right? When the oxygen levels drop and those masks drop, you don't put the mask on your child first. You put the mask on yourself first. Why? Because if you don't put the mask on yourself, you're going to pass out and you and your child are going to end up having a problem. So you have to first put the mask on yourself so that then you can take care of your child. And this is an important concept that the loving of yourself, you know, is on the same level, on a much higher level, but the same thought process. So when you talked about the immune system, you're absolutely right. These are instrumental concepts to help the immune system. There have already been studies that have been done that show the relationship between the immune system and things that we would never, ever expect. So let's go back to the mindset for a second. Natural killer cells, we measure the lymphocyte subpopulation to assess efficacy for our treatment, as well as progress of, you know, whether a person is getting worse or better. So progression, and these are both things that the HeadMap tracks, actually it tracks efficacy of treatment as well as the progress of treatment, whether the person is getting better or worse. So one of the things that we do when I'm looking at laboratory assessments in cancer patients, I'm looking at the lymphocyte subpopulation. I'm looking at CD3, CD4, CD8, CD16, CD19, CD56. So these are basically different types of white blood cells. So white blood cells, the all-encompassing term for white blood cells is lymphocytes. So the CD19 and CD56, for example, actually CD19 is a B lymphocytes. Those are the ones that are part and parcel of the humoral response, immune response system. And they're the ones that are responsible for making antibodies. Then you've got the CD56, and those are the natural killer cells. And those are part of the cellular immune system, the cytotoxic component of the immune system. And again, there's different ratios that we look at, et cetera, et cetera. So when you are dealing with the issue of cancer, by definition, that cancer cannot be possible unless your immune system is no longer functioning or has been damaged or something. In other words, you have to have an immune compromised system. Your immune system has to have been compromised, has to be deficient or damaged or no longer functional in order for you to get cancer. There is no way for you to have cancer if you have an intact immune system. It just doesn't go hand in hand, right? So by definition, if somebody has a cancer, they have a dysfunctional, non-functional, or damaged immune system. So that's the basic fundamental place where we start from. Does that answer your question?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you just confirmed, you know, an important point that I think is so critical for everyone to understand. I just want to repeat what you said, which is if you have a fully functioning immune system, you have a fully intact immune system, you're not going to have a cancer diagnosis.
It's impossible.
But if your immune system's weak, it's compromised, it's not functioning at its full capacity, you are going to likely have a cancer diagnosis, or certainly cancer forming in the body, even if it's not diagnosed. So, I mean, the simple question is that, I mean, the most logical question is, okay, so if it's my immune system, which is directly correlating to a cancer diagnosis, then what do we need to do for the immune system?
Well, that's where the seven toxicities come into play. That's where the nine steps to keep the doctor comes into play. My international best-selling book, that's where a lot of the things that we teach at Advanced Medicine come into play to empower people with knowledge, because once they have that knowledge, the beautiful thing is that nobody can take advantage of you. You can't be victimized. And it helps you to create autonomy and understanding of what you need to do directly to be able to take charge of your own health. And that's where the HeadMap tool comes in, the Advanced Health Evaluation Assessment for Detoxification Medical Assessment Program. And it's assessing all various levels of toxicity in the body so that we ourselves can take control of our health and do what's necessary to reduce that toxic burden on the organ system, which then in turn will help to improve the state of the physiology, of your own physiology. So the three foundations of health in my world, it all starts from systemic detoxification, physiological optimization, and immune modulation. If you read my book, it'll actually say systemic detoxification, physiological optimization, and then this says hormonal optimization. And what had happened was one of the freaking editors went in there and they were seeing all the different things that I had, and hormonal optimization was one of the chapters, and they thought that was supposed to be the third foundation of health. But in actuality, it's immune modulation. If you have a hyperimmune response, bringing it back down. If you have a hypoimmune response, bringing it back up. Hyperimmune response would be allergies. It would be like the sclerodermas, the anaphylaxis type things. Whereas the hypoimmune responses would be like diabetes, transplant, cancer, HIV. So you want to modulate the immune system so it becomes a normal functioning immune system. And that immune system, if you do the systemic detoxification, you do the physiological optimization, you do the immune modulation, then you don't have to worry about the hormonal aspects and the endocrine aspects and all those things, because they get balanced out anyway. So that is a little bit of a, you know, I've had so many times, the book was like 630 some pages and the editors had broken it all the way down, and then they changed everything. And so it was a big mess, and I had to go back and redo everything else. We had to start again from the same 600 pages. And it came out to be like 386 pages. I was told that you don't want to have a book that long. Again, I listened to the marketing people and they were idiots because they were wrong. The biggest complaint about the book, I'm not kidding you, the biggest complaint we've had about the book is that the book was too short at 386 pages. I felt like my best friend was, I just lost my best friend. I mean, these are the types of comments that people were writing. And I'm going to have the next version of the book. It already became Wall Street Journal, USA Today. I think it hit bestsellers that hit number 3 on Amazon. They got translated. So the next version of it, when we do the next printing, it's going to probably have the full version in it. But I've told people, you know, it's in the book. It's in the book. And then people go in, they say, it's not in the book. I'm like, no, it's in the book. You know, no, it's not in the book. And then I go in there, try to find the book, and it's not in the book. So they took it out. And so it's been one of those little frustrating things. But the 9 steps to keep the doctor away, those 9 steps, if people do that, it will get them on the right course. And then we have additional programs at advancedmedicine.com. They can go and they can get access to the HeadMap. Again, there's no cost to this. It empowers a person. And I think that people will start to see the light as soon as you start. It's kind of like opening, it's kind of like that commercial. What is it for the, I can't remember what chip commercial it is now, where you eat one and then you can't stop and you keep on eating. So it's like one of those things. Once you start becoming aware, you can't stop it, right? Your curiosity will kick in and you'll become intrigued and you'll start doing one thing. And then you'll start, if you actually have the right mindset and you go forward, you try that one thing, you start seeing a benefit from it, that's contagious. And then it just starts to cascade from there. And then you start, you know, hearing people talk about it. And, you know, we've experienced this viral growth type of thing because we see as people's lives change, how they start telling other people. And, you know, I don't advertise in 93 countries, 94 countries. I don't even advertise here. But my first year in private practice, when I got out of the Army in 96, we had one of those little yellow page ads. And then the second year we got rid of the ad and just made it like a one liner. It was just a, you know, bold line. And in 1998, I stopped that even, and we've never advertised anywhere since then. We are on the internet and we put out videos and this and that, but as far as advertising, paid advertising, I've never paid since 1997, and it's all word of mouth. So how do we get patients? I've been asked this before. How do you get patients from 94 countries? And I'm like, you figure it out. Let me know, because I have no idea. It's just, you know, people going to tell other people, and that's how it spread.
I love the title of your book, Nine Steps Keep the Doctor Away, you know, written by a doctor, by yourself. And Nine Steps, it's a statement, a testament to who you are as a human being, which is, you're not, you know, trying to, it's like, it's unfortunate with our current medical model that, you know, it's such a giant business, it's such a corporation that, unfortunately, people are getting sucked into this windmill, this financial turbulent disaster, and this, you know, repetitive, let's treat the symptoms with drugs, with more visits, with drugs, with surgery, with, you know, these really expensive treatments that unfortunately aren't getting the results that people need. And what you're doing is, even though you have your clinical practice, people come and see you, I know you're very busy, you're teaching and educating and supporting people what they can do for themselves. And I love that. And I think it's, you know, it is, yes, some people need the hands-on, they need to go to the clinic, they need the direct support, they need the consultations, and that's awesome. And if you are tuning in here and you're somebody who is diligent and a go-getter and a self-starter and someone who can read and research and listen, go get the book, read it, you know, educate yourself. Go to advancedmedicine.com. You can sign up for a head map for free. There's a code. You can write this down and put it in. I'll tell you right now. I'll share it again in case you miss it. But 137758. So go to advancedmedicine.com. Use the code 137758 so you can get into a plethora of resources from Dr. Buttar that will help you move forward in your health and healing journey for free. That's all free. AdvancedMedicine.com. Use that
code. Yeah, Nathan, if I can just interject, that invitation code is necessary. I mean, you can still get in without that invitation code, but you can't unlock the dashboard. And the dashboard is where the magic happens, and certain videos that have been censored are available, and the head map is available. There are other things that are available without the invitation code, but that invitation code kind of unlocks a whole bunch of things. So that's the reason this is important for your listeners.
Thank you. So what are some very practical things people can start doing right now on their own? Some of the things that are covered in your book or in the advancedmedicine.com website to enhance their immune system, to help modulate the immune system, to help, you know, create a better fighting chance against cancer?
Well, we have a program called the Map to Get Ahead program. And that Map to Get Ahead program has two simple changes to change your life. Essentially, it's a video. And the question is, after looking back at a few thousand of my patients and seeing some of the things that we talk to them about in the nine steps. The nine steps to keep the doctor were all the principles that I had started talking to my patients about. And it started off, you know, as originally as like the seven toxicities, actually where I started as three toxicities and then eventually became seven toxicities. Those steps were originally seven steps and then went to eight and then nine. But if you start looking at all of those things, I saw there were six things that people had improvements in rapidly if they did a couple of things. Those things were improved sleep, improvement in bowel movements, increased energy, increase in focus, concentration, and a sense of well-being. So we put this video together called The Two Simple Changes, which is the core of the Map to Get Ahead program. And it's basically increase your sleep or improve your sleep, increase your energy, improve your bowel movements, while at the same time increasing concentration, focus, and the sense of well-being, all within 30 days by implementing two simple changes in your life. That's not a product you have to take. It's two simple changes you make in your life. And it's actually five things, but three of them are can be combined, and it's all passive. I can't tell you what those are because that's part of the Map to Get Ahead program. And then we, you know, throw in the book and all this other stuff. There's videos and subliminal programs, and there's a free consultation with one of our coaches. And it's a whole bunch of stuff. And it basically is a $2,600 value. So that component, it's interesting the way, and I'm not giving you a pitch. I'm just letting you know how this program came into being. The Map to Get Ahead program is this $2,600 thing, but I wanted to give it to everybody for free. And so what we did was we made the Map to Get Ahead program accessible to anybody. They can get it for free. If they're interested in learning how they can get it for free, then they can learn about the IADFW. So the IADFW is the International Association for a Disease-Free World. And that's a private membership. It's normally $99 a year. But right now, what we've been doing is that anybody who joins, we give them the Map to Get Ahead program for free. And on top of that, instead of making it the annual membership, we're upgrading everybody to a lifetime membership. So if people do that, then they get access to all these things. And here's the problem. You know, if a person says one thing or another thing, then people will go try it and they don't get the whole thing, right? They don't quite understand it. They're like, oh, this doesn't work. So we've got a very specific system and we know how well it works. We haven't even released the testimonials of people that have experienced the benefits because there's so many of them that have come in. So we're going to put all this stuff together. But if they go to Advanced Medicine on the left-hand side on the dashboard, they'll see a place to join IADFW. And they can, if they would decide that they want to, you know, learn more about it, they can. They can also go to askdrbutar.com/ask, and they can go through that information. There's a lot of information on cancer there. There's a whole series of videos that will be available there. I think there's like 60 videos. It's called the Cancer Convalescence Conversations, or Cancer Conversations of Convalescence. And basically it's groups of patients that had cancer as they were going through treatment. And basically I sat down with four patients and I gave them a free for all. And they spent 3 hours asking me different questions. And so it was so powerful. You know, we edited them down to 5 to 7 minute, maybe up to 10 minute segments that were relevant to a specific question. And it was so powerful when we did it again a year later with the four other patients. And so it's become like 50, 60 different videos. And they're actually being finally edited right now. The final edits are being done, but that's all going to be available for free. I was told that, you know, you put a $500 value on that. You can sell it. You have no idea how much that's valuable. And I was like, We don't need to put a value, you know, charge people for this. This is just information. It's empowering. And so those videos would be available. If you go to askdrbutar.com/ask, people will get access to that. There's 12 videos out there also on autism. So it just says, if you're interested in cancer here, if you're interested in learning more about autism, it's here, and about the head map, you know, here. So if you go to askdrbutar.com/ask, all that stuff will be there. The head map information is there. And there's a video they can also watch that's about the IADFW and about this Map to Get Ahead program. And if they have an interest, they can do that. But certainly, you know, unlock your dashboard and go and get access to the head map and start doing the head map once a month, because guys, it doesn't cost anything. It's, you know, and sometimes people have that association. Well, if it's free, it must not be worth something. This thing was valued at $300 every time you take it. I will not see a patient in my clinic unless they've done the head map. I just won't see them. It doesn't give me, it's that powerful. It's got 350 years. Well, we should say it's got 350 years of clinical experience fueling it, because myself and the other doctors put the head map together, all of our combined clinical experience was 350 years. But that was in 2010 when we went to the first electronic version, because it started in 2000 and it's gone through many different iterations. But in 2010, it went to the first electronic version and it's gone through over 100 renditions since then. And all those doctors are still practicing medicine. So now you've got another 10 years times 16 doctors. It's another 160 years. You add that to 350 years, we've got over 500 years of clinical experience fueling the head map. And as I said, it's got a $300 value as assessed by a third-party independent actuarial analyst for an insurance company in California. So it's worth a lot. Just because it's free to you, don't underestimate the power of it. If you do, you're going to be paying a price that, you're going to be giving up a lot of value. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, thank you for that. I mean, thank you for making a lot of these resources free and accessible to so many people. I do want to bring this point back around, since we, you know, opened with the immune system and we went really deep. into, you know, mindset, beliefs, spirituality, care and love, self-care for ourselves. I just want to bring this point back around for anyone who's still holding on to any questions around it. All of those things we spoke about the entire time are not only ancient wisdom coming from our ancient ancestors that they've known for thousands of years, then loving ourselves and self-care and gratitude and choosing to think positively and care about ourselves and others and, you know, having a deeper spiritual connection, connecting to our higher purpose and finding purpose and meaning in our lives. Not only have our ancient ancestors known all this for thousands of years, that it is vital and important to our health and longevity and wellness overall, but our modern science has validated every single one of these things with dozens and dozens of studies that I've researched personally in PubMed and the National Institutes of Health and so on and so forth, that they all directly and positively contribute to an improved immune system function. So if you, and vice versa, negative self-talk, you know, limiting beliefs, mental, emotional trauma, childhood trauma, all of these things, you know, fear, anxiety, as you're talking about, better sleep, lack of sleep, toxic exposure, so on and so forth, they all contribute to a depleted immune system. They all basically turn your immune system off. When you're in fear, anxiety, any of these experiences, you know, your adrenal system turns on, your immune system turns off, and it can't function at the potential that it's meant to function at, and vice versa. Meditation and gratitude and, you know, exercise and deeper spiritual connection, all of these experiences literally turn on your immune system and help your body to get rid of cancer cells. So it wasn't, you know, while it was a beautiful philosophical and spiritual discussion, it's also very practical. I just want to get that point across for anyone who's still thinking like, you know, I came here for specific solutions for the immune system. Well, everything we talked about are literally specific solutions for the immune system. And I think for people wanting to go deeper, you know, your book, your videos, all of that is great, great information resources for people. So as we wrap up here, Dr. Bitard, any final thoughts, words of inspiration, words of wisdom, you know, you want to leave our viewers with, you know, who are dealing with cancer or have a loved one dealing with cancer, and you know they want to move forward, but you know, might need that extra support.
Well, since you brought up thing, you know, people said, well, I came here for specifically to know exactly what I need to do for cancer. So I'll give you a quick brief overview of what we do as far as how we approach it. It's a 5-step approach to cancer. It's very, very simple. The first one is physiological optimization. So what does that mean? That means to the certain things that the body does naturally, and we want to address those issues and upregulate those issues. So for example, cancer is an obligate glucose metabolizer. So we want to reduce the amount of sugar that we're taking into our diet. Cancer is an obligate anaerobic metabolizer, which means it hates oxygen. It likes an oxygen-free environment. So we want to do things that to enhance the level of oxygen inside our bodies. And so there's certain things we do for that. So that's all part and parcel of that very first step, physiological optimization. Second one is systemic detoxification. It's actually systemic detoxification, that's the first one. The three foundations of health that I talk about in the 9 steps to keep the doctor away are the same first three foundations in our 5-step approach to cancer. It's actually the same three. So it's systemic detoxification, meaning cleaning up the body, not just from the heavy metals and the persistent organic pollutants, but from the emotional, psychological aspects, from all the 7 different toxicities that I talk about in the book and that are also discussed in the video series at Advanced Medicine. So systemic detoxification, systemic meaning the whole system, not just one part of it. So systemic detoxification is first one, physiological optimization is the second one. Sometimes I'll start a person on the physiological optimization first, because as they start to experience a benefit, then you can get them to start doing the things that are necessary for detoxification, because that's usually a more involved step. So a person can start certain things for physiological optimization on their own, whereas a systemic detoxification is a little bit harder. They usually need somebody to help them do that, a physician or somebody that knows how to deal with those things. So that's one reason sometimes I'll flip them, just depending on who the audience is. But basically the first 2 steps, systemic detoxification and physiological optimization. The third step is immune modulation. You have to start to repair and enhance the immune system. The fourth step is target acquisition. Now, this fourth step, up to the first two steps, you know, many doctors have different varying programs. I'm obviously biased. I think we have the best one for those first two steps. But when it comes to the third step, immune modulation, we pretty much already know we're the best there, because what we've been doing that you did not hear about, immune therapy and cancer that's become popular in the last 5-6 years, we've been doing it since 1996. So, you know, for 24 years. And right now, if they were at the point, we're probably 20 to 25 years ahead of the rest of the game for, on a planetary basis as far as what's being done for immune modulation. The fourth step is target acquisition. And nobody has that. Anybody that's using the target acquisition the way I do it, they learned it from me, and they're accessing those tools from us. So the fourth step, target acquisition, is basically acquiescing the target. The body doesn't know what's foreign. So the third step, immune modulation, is help the immune system recognize what's foreign in the body and start to work. I remember I said the cancer cannot be present if you have an intact immune system, because the immune system is designed to monitor. Everybody has cancer cells in their bodies all the time, but the immune system is monitoring and then seeing certain things that need to be taken care of, and then the immune system does its job. But if the immune system can't do its job and can't regulate those cells that are becoming cancerous and annihilate them and get rid of them, then you end up having this thing called cancer. Cancer is, remember I said the scientific definition of cancer, the physiological definition of cancer, is a suppression of apoptosis and uncontrolled cellular proliferation. So suppression of apoptosis, apoptosis is essentially programmed cell death. So the apoptotic cascade is a cascade that's initiated in a cell when something goes awry within the cell. And when something goes awry, something's not working right, the cell has a self-destruct button to prevent itself from surviving so that it doesn't create a problem for the whole. So it's actually self-destruction in order to prevent more contamination of the whole. Well, in cancer, there's a suppression of apoptosis. So because that self-destruction program isn't working, those cells don't self-destruct and they become rampant and they start to grow really fast. And that's what cancer is. So cancer is a suppression of apoptosis and uncontrolled cellular proliferation. So our fourth step, target acquisition, is to acquiesce the target. Because of the third step, because the immune system couldn't regulate it, the cancer starts. So now at our point, we want to repair the immune system, and then we want to acquiesce the cancer. We want to identify the cancer as being foreign because the immune system can't recognize it. So in the third step, we do deal with that portion to help the immune system become repaired. In the fourth step, we help the immune system to recognize the cancer as being foreign. And that's what we call the target acquisition phase. And we do that with a treatment that we call ARSOTA. ARSOTA stands for autogenous antigen receptor specific oncogenic target acquisition. So it's helping the body to identify the cancer as being foreign and targeting into it. And then the fifth step is maintenance. So that's our five-step approach to cancer. And since you brought it up, I thought, okay, I'll go ahead and, you know, just quickly go through that brief, maybe it wasn't so brief, explanation of our approach to cancer. As far as my last closing words of inspiration that you said, I would just remind people that everything happens for a reason. We hear that all the time, but I think it becomes more of a cliche and people don't recognize it, but they hear it. But it's like, yeah, how can cancer happen for a reason? You know, what did I do wrong? And it's that victim mentality. Well, think of it this way. There could have been a different way that you could have been taken out of the game, right? And this was a warning. The Creator is giving you an opportunity to rise your head, to raise it up, to see what it is and recognize it for what it is, and for you to take appropriate action that's necessary in order for you to go on to live a longer and healthier and happier and more prosperous life. But if you are in that same train of thought that led you to the cancer, you're not going to be able to enjoy that more fruitful life. The only way you can do that is to change, and that cancer is a wake-up call to change.
Beautiful. Yeah, thank you so much, Dr. Buttar. Thank you for all the great work you do, and for, you know, turning this into a really great, you know, philosophical, spiritual discussion. We didn't have any of that planned. It just flowed intuitively, and it was perfect, just as the way it was. Like you said, everything happens for a reason. I think for those of you tuning in here, you're listening to this message for a reason, and I encourage you to do something important with it for your life. So again, Dr. Patar, thank you so much for all the great work you do, for being here with us and sharing all this great wisdom. It's been an honor.
Thank you, Nathan. I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
And I want to thank all of you for tuning in here to the Global Cancer Symposium. Make sure to share this, your friends, your family, anybody who needs to hear this message. Also, make sure to visit advancedmedicine.com to get the access to the program, to the dashboard. As Dr. Patar said, for free, you can use the code 137758, or just go to askdrpatar.com/ask, and you'll see a plethora of great resources there for you to help you move forward in your health and healing journey. Also, take a look at the healthandhealingclub.com, where you can join our global membership dedicated to helping you get and stay healthy. Again, I'm Nathan Crane. I wish you all ultimate health and happiness. Take care.